My name is James. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really honored and humbled to be here today. This is a really special day for me. It's January 22nd, 2017, and it's the day that I don't drink. And before I had found you, the day that I always focus on was tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm going to get it together. I'll make a list, and I think I'll just, might even quit drinking tomorrow. But today, I'm going to have another drink. And I thank you for that simple twist in my thinking of making today important and not really caring about tomorrow. Thank you for that. A while back, I went to I spoke out of town, and I had a flight that was delayed, and I was afraid that I was going to miss my speaking engagement, and I'm a modern man, so I texted my host, and I asked him what to do, and he said, read page 449 and go to a meeting. So I knew I was in good hands. Not a problem this time, because I live up the road in Sayulita during the wintertime. And I'd like to invite you all to come. We have four meetings a week, all at 5:30. We have a women's meeting on Monday, and Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturdays we have open meetings. Love for you to come up there. I brought a bottle of Smart Water with me. I don't know if you're familiar with Smart Water, but I'm hoping it's going to help my talk. It should kick in here in a minute. But the first time I came across Smart Water, one of my sponsees gave it to me, but I couldn't get it open. It's a really weird cap. I guess you have to drink it first to get smart. I don't know, but I love sponsees. How many, out of show of hands, how many people have sponsees? Fantastic. Extra credit, how many have sponsees with them here today? All right. I got one over here, Steve. I don't like to leave home without him. Yeah. And even as special as having a sponsee here, I have my wife with me today. Betty, you want to stand up and say hello to everybody? She's the love of my life. She taught me how to love. I got to thinking about this Smart Water, early on in my drinking, I had one or two good jobs, and one of the jobs I had, I worked in New York at an advertising agency. And if you ever watch Mad Men on TV, is like that's what it was like where I was. It was in the 70s in New York. And wouldn't it have been clever if somebody that time or some other time was able to properly label whiskey? Because when you go to a liquor store and buy a bottle, you just don't know what you're going to get. Kind of like chocolate. You just don't know what it's going to be. And, you know, early on in my drinking, I'd go to the liquor store and I'd get a bottle of, you know, conviviality with friends and colorful imagination. And, you know, I'd drink some more, and then I'd get one like puking and going to jail. And too drunk to drive, so too drunk to walk, so I have to drive. I'm not proud of that, but that's happened. And then I'd get some dialing whiskey. You ever had any of that? Or traveling whiskey? You know, I would have sworn it was a girl that I'd picked up that night before, but that's fifth step stuff. I'm getting ahead of myself. You know, and then the stuff started being like quicksand whiskey, and could have had a skull and crossbones on it for all I care. And the drinking just got worse. I never found any of that smart whiskey later on in my drinking. And then it just became pitiful and incomprehensible whiskey. That kind of covers my drinking. But drinking is not my only problem. I have a problem called thinking. Drinking and thinking and drinking and thinking and thinking and drinking and drinking and thinking and drinking. It's exhausting. Like my friend Leslie likes to say, we come because of the drink and we stay because of the think. When you take an alcoholic and take away the alcohol, you're just left with the ick. Have you seen those? I'm sure most of you have seen those 20 questions for drinking. Have you ever taken those questions and applied them to your thinking? Is your thinking causing you problems at home? Do you like to think alone? Do you think maybe your life would be better if you never thought at all? Never had any thinks? No thanks. I love something Einstein said. He said, none of your current problems can be solved by the thinking that created them. I cannot solve my problems by thinking about them. My thinking created my problems. I love it when I hear people in AA talk about this. They have this little hamster in their head that's kind of spinning around. I think, how sweet is that? I have a shit-slinging monkey in my head. So I'm the kind of guy that needs help. I need help. So I have a sponsor. My sponsor's name is Jack, and before until recently, the last job I had, I was a teacher in a prison, and it was called the Department of Corrections, and Jack was an airline traffic controller, so control and correction. Jack and I have problems. Jack's my second sponsor. There's a saying in AA, be nice to the newcomer, he may be your sponsor someday, and I was nice to Jack when he got sober, and he's my sponsor now. My first sponsor was a woman named Donna. And Donna was a heavy smoker, and she died when I had 18 years of sobriety. And the last thing I remember Donna saying to me is, sobriety is no fun when you can't breathe. I also have a sobriety date. It's December the 6th, 1982. Last month I celebrated 34 years of sobriety. Thank you. I heard it said that clapping for an alcoholic who quits drinking is like clapping for a cowboy with hemorrhoids who stops riding his horse. I heard a guy at a meeting one time, outside of a meeting, somebody had asked a newer guy what his sobriety date was, and he says, which one? He says, I haven't had crank for 3 years, and haven't smoked any pot for a year, and I would have 90 days today, but I had a beer last night, so I got 89 days today. That's called newcomer math. So through a set of bad breaks and misunderstandings, and I'm not too sure what all, I ended up in AA. And, I had got to a point in my life where I wanted to quit drinking. No, I wanted to quit having the consequences of drinking. I don't think I wanted to quit drinking. I wanted to quit having the consequences of drinking. And I came up with this plan that... I thought, okay, I'll quit drinking, but I'll smoke marijuana because my problem is alcohol. It was pretty clear in my mind that alcohol was my problem. And I'm a gardener, and I had a nice little patch of marijuana growing, and I quit drinking. And I did that for a while, and I thought that I was okay because I wasn't drinking, and drinking was my problem. And during that time, my sister came to AA, and she encouraged me to go. She didn't bug me about it, but she knew who I was and what I did. And she said, why don't you come to AA? And what she said about it, she says, you'll like the people, and the people will like you. Wow. Was she ever right about that? I thank her for that. So I end up in AA, and I'm not alcoholic, though. I'm not even drinking. So I introduced myself as an existentialist. And I don't know if we have any of those here today, but hopefully not. But so I'm going to meetings. You know, I could wonder why would somebody who's not alcoholic keep coming to the meetings? But I had no defense against the love that I felt. There was something so powerful and so magical that was just drawing me back to the meetings and back to the meetings. And one day, unbeknownst, without any planning on my part, I raised my hand and said I was alcoholic. And it's like I caught this disease from you guys. This is contagious. I remember after I raised my hand, someone said, oh, it's finally unanimous. I mean, everybody else knew that I was alcoholic. And, you know, I found that blue book, and I'm sure there was, I thought for sure there would be something in there about marijuana, because marijuana is a problem for a lot of people who quit drinking or try to quit drinking. And I'm looking through that book, and I'm looking. I don't find anything in there about marijuana. And then one day, buried in the book, I found a little something about marijuana, and it was on page one. Here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking small cold beer. A good soldier is ne'er forgot if he died by musket or by pot. They don't mention hard drugs till page 7. I'm behind this idea of singleness of purpose, but what I understand about that is it means that we all have alcoholism and we all have a program of recovery from alcoholism. It doesn't mean what we did to get here. A lot of us did a lot of different things. You know, I smoked a lot of pot and other substances, but I'm alcoholic. So I don't think we need to be afraid of people who do drugs. They just have to have what happened to me is that we catch alcoholism when we come here. So I'm glad that I caught it, and thank you for giving it to me. So, you know, people do, I've got a guy, you can't make this stuff up. You know, it's like, I got a guy who wanted to figure out some way to help him with his drinking. You know, people try Oprah to help them or Chopra to help them or... This guy joined Amway thinking it would help him. No. But it didn't. So I'm you know, I hear this, I'm in a meeting and I hear this thing about you have an allergy and you have to go to meetings for the rest of your life. And I got to thinking, my dad had an allergy to bananas. He never went to BA. I don't think there is such a thing as Bananas Anonymous. But bananas didn't talk to him. He didn't have a hard day at work and come home and think, God, I have to have a banana. No. You know, alcohol talked to me. And the tricky part about it is it used my own voice. And it said to me, oh, you need to have a drink. They were mean to you or you have something to celebrate. There was always some reason that this voice would tell me it was okay to have a drink. So it's very different than bananas. And I need to have help. I can't beat this by myself. So I need help. So I'm going to meetings because I hear meeting makers make it. I'm not doing anything else, but I'm going to meetings. And you know how these old timers are, they come and poke you in the chest and, you know, I wasn't a kid. I was like a 38-year-old bachelor when I got here. He said, hey, kid, you reading the book? I said, I don't really like that book. The syntax are terrible. And I don't even know a Mr. Brown. I don't like that book. I said, see, are you working the steps? I said, I don't really like your 12 commandments. I'm not really interested in that. Are you meditating? No, I'm not doing it. My head's too busy for that. You got a sponsor? No, I got it. I got it. I don't need a sponsor. Do you believe in God? No, I don't believe in God. I studied philosophy in college. I don't believe in God. Then he asked me the kicker. He says, how's it going? It wasn't going very well. I was unraveling. My experience, and I've seen it in other people too, I think there's a window of time, probably around 6 months, where you can put down the drugs, put down the alcohol, come to meetings, not do anything, and still stay together. And then it's either work the steps or die, basically, or work the steps or go get drunk. And I was at that point. I'm at a meeting one day, and I'm wondering whether I have the capacity to do this. You know, do I have the skill set to stay sober? And I look over and I'm thinking about this, and I look over and somebody's got this piece of paper that they're reading. And at the beginning they say, how it works. I'm like, oh, I better listen to this. And the first thing I hear is that rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed a path. And I think, okay, you know, I can do that. I had a path to the liquor store. I had a rut between me, where I lived, and where the liquor store was. I can follow a path. I've mowed a lot of lawns in my day. I like mowing lawns. And I know when you mow a lawn and you look back, you can't even see your footprints because the grass springs right back up. In order to create a path, you have to cover the same piece of ground hundreds of times, maybe thousands of times. And the path is created when you go over the same spot again and again and again. I thought, I can do that. And I realized that these steps, this How It Works page is like a map. But it's the journey that's important, not the map. And I got to thinking, like if you go to a restaurant, it's not the menu that's important, it's the meal. Or if you ever get a prescription, it's the medicine that's important, not the prescription. I don't know if you've ever had a prescription, but if you didn't want to take it, I'd take it. I have always taken a prescription when I went to a doctor and was sick for something. So I thought, okay, this is kind of what AA is like. I have to be willing to take the medicine. And okay, I can do that. Then it says something about completely give yourself to this simple program. Okay, I completely gave myself to alcohol. I can do that. I know how to give myself to something. Then it says something about grasping and developing a manner of living. I think, okay, this is not a hobby. This is a way of living. And I thought, okay, when I was drinking, that was a way of living. All my decisions, all my behavior and actions were based on drinking and everything that revolved around that. So what you're proposing is that I accept this way of life instead of that way of life. So I could do that. Then it says something about being honest. I think, I don't ever remember reading in a book how to be honest. I don't know, maybe there's a book that explains how to do it, but I listened to your voice, and I knew you were telling the truth about yourself. And I thought, you know, I can learn how to tell the truth about myself. So you kind of showed me how to do that. Then it says something about if you want what we have. I think, well, they're not talking about teeth. I think, okay, people in AA don't drink. That's pretty cool. I really wanted that. I wanted to not drink. And I thought about it a little bit more. It's like, people in AA don't drink and they like not drinking. That's a big step from not drinking. And then I'm in a little longer and I realize the gift that you really have, the most precious gift that we all have, is relieve me of the bondage of self. What a beautiful gift that is. And that's the gift, I believe, that we get in AA. Then it says something about going to any lengths. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't want to ask anybody what that meant. But I didn't think I could do it. I think, I don't know if I can do that. I can do it today, because I think I know what it means today. It means that today I won't take a drink today. No matter what happens, I will not take a drink today. Then it says something about getting rid of our old ideas. You know, I came to AA and I thought, this is brainwashing. And I thought, well, my brain could use a good scrub. Well, my thinking was killing me. I needed some new ideas. So I became willing to get rid of my old ideas. Then it says something about half measures avail us nothing. What I understand that to mean is if you just quit drinking, it's going to avail you nothing because that's only half of what we do. The other half of what we do is we work this program. So I was at a position when I was thinking these thoughts is that I was doing half measures. I had to be willing to do the rest of the work or it wasn't going to work. Then it mentions something about God. And this was a big stumbling block for me. I don't know, but I'm not so sure that I can embrace this God idea. And then it says something about these are only suggestions. So I think, okay, I was able to, at least in reading that, saying, I think I can go forward with this. I believe this is going to work. And it's really weird when a person makes a decision to do something, the world conspires to help. The world just comes from every direction to want to help. And right about this time, my sister suggested I go see this guy named Howard, who was an AA member but also a family counselor. And I went to see Howard, and for the first time in my memory, I told the truth to somebody. I had snot running down my face. I was crying for like an hour. And I told Howard the truth about myself. I'd never done that. I'd been to psychiatrists before and shrinks before, but I'd always lied to them. I heard somebody say that alcoholics really ought to go to veterinarians because they're used to guessing what's wrong with their patients. You know? So I told Howard the truth about myself, and I would describe my drinking as secretive and sleazy. I did a lot of things that I was a lot of shame about them, and it was ugly. I didn't want to talk about it, but I told Howard the truth. And at the end of the hour, Howard got out a piece of paper, and he wrote, "Prescription, get on your knees and pray." And I paid him $50 for that, which it was kind of like a $50 fifth step with no fourth step. So, and Howard gave me a phone number. He said, "Call this person and ask this person to be your sponsor." And that was Donna, and I called Donna and asked her. And I wanted to get my $50 worth, so I started to do what Howard suggested that I do. I did not believe in God, but I said, "God, what do you want me to do? And give me the power to do it." And I also said, "Thank you for another day of sobriety." I called up Donna, and I said, "Would you be my sponsor?" I'd never met her before. I didn't know who she was. She was the perfect person for me, as it turns out. And she said, "If you will go to 4 meetings a week, write in a journal and share your journal with me once a week and work the steps with me, I'll be your sponsor." And I agreed to do that. And I started off on this journey. So I start meeting Donna. And there's little numbers on the steps for people that went to college. And I go back to number one. And I look back over my life. And it's real clear to me that when I took a drink, I couldn't stop. But I didn't want to be alcoholic, and so I devised this very clever experiment, I thought, to prove to myself that I wasn't alcoholic. And what I did is I said, "Okay, I know an alcoholic couldn't not drink for 30 days, so I'm going to not drink for 30 days to prove that I'm not an alcoholic." I thought somehow alcoholism was something about quantity or frequency. And so I didn't drink for 30 days. And I had a glass of wine at lunch to celebrate not drinking for 30 days. And I was in jail at midnight that night. So what I had done is I'd proved that I am alcoholic. Because when I take a drink, I can't stop. There's a second part to step one. I call it step one part B. That my life is unmanageable. And I don't believe that it was unmanageable as a result of not understanding that I was powerless over alcohol. It was unmanageable before I even took a drink. So the drink, because of my unmanageability, seemed like a good solution for my problems. So what I've come to understand about step one part B is that I'm not the manager. I'd like to be the manager. I've got some really good ideas. But I'm not the manager. And one of the things that I do, not being the manager, is I don't ask why questions. Why is a management question? I'm in footwork. And what I found is that when I ask why, because I slip up sometimes and ask why, is that I'm asking for an argument with God. And I'm never going to like the answer. Why am I alcoholic? It's not a good question. The good question that I ask myself is, what am I going to do about it? That's a good question for a guy like me. Because what I've found that I need to embrace and accept reality. And the reality of it is that I'm alcoholic. And if I don't accept that, I'm fighting reality. But when I fight reality, I lose 100% of the time. I always lose when I fight reality. So a visual that I liked. A couple visuals I liked. They involved circuses. But in the not being a manager thing, when somebody's coming to me and wants me to get into their circle of problems, I say, not my monkeys, not my circus. Or that I'm working in a circus and I'm in charge of cleanup and I got a bucket and I got a shovel, but I don't get to decide how many elephants are in the parade. Yeah, I just have to clean it up afterwards. So that kind of gets me through step one. Step two, we all have crazy stories. All of us have crazy stories of things we've done when we're drinking. But what I came to realize is that the craziest thing I ever did, I did when I was sober. I picked up another drink. For a guy like me to pick up a drink means I'm crazy. During the time that I worked in this prison, I worked in a prison for 15 years as a teacher. I was a landscaping teacher, of all things, a person who grew pot. You know, God has a sense of humor, so I'm teaching landscaping to inmates. And they all want to know how to grow pot. And I asked my students over a 15-year period, I asked all of them. I had 30 at a time, and some of them I had for quite a while. I said, have you ever heard of AA? They all had, as you can well imagine, mostly. Have you ever been to AA? Most of them said yes, they'd been to AA. Then I asked them some more questions. I said, have you ever had a sponsor in AA? Have you ever had over a year of sobriety in AA? Have you ever worked the steps in AA? Have you ever had a service commitment in AA? And in that 15-year period, probably 25 guys said yes to all those questions. I asked them one more question. What are you doing in prison? They all had the same answer, and I think you know what the answer is. You know what the answer is? They stopped going to meetings. So the way that I see it is, if you stop going to meetings, you'll go insane. Because I have to go insane first to pick up a drink. So I go to meetings so I won't go insane, and I get to find out what happens to people that don't go to meetings because they go insane. And what I learned from that is, don't let the life that AA gives me get in the way of my AA way of life. I'll say that one more time. Don't let the life that AA gives me get in the way of my AA way of life. This is the way of life, and it gets so good, it's very easy for me, and maybe you, to pull away from it a little bit because we're so busy enjoying the good life that we got as a result of being here. So I have to make sure that doesn't happen. Step three, I go to my sponsor and say, well, this is as far as we go. She says, why is that? I said, well, I don't believe in God. And she says, tell me more. And I said, this stuff is so contradictory and it's so confusing. I can't go forward. And she says, what are you talking about? I said, well, you know, one person says, the book says, you have to be rigorously honest. And someone else says, fake it till you make it. And then the book says the problem is in our mind. And then you read it on the wall, it says, think, think, think. Taking a trip, not taking a trip. Recovered, recovering. You have to give it away to keep it. That doesn't make any sense at all. You have to surrender to win. Say that to your military friends. You know? The road narrows. Join us on the broad highway. If you can't remember your last drink, you haven't had it. The book says you won't remember the suffering and humiliation of even a week ago. You have a disease and you have to take a moral inventory. People with cancer don't have to take a moral inventory. There is one who has all power. That one is God. The line before that says, remember we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Well, how can God have all the power and alcohol be powerful? I think about this kind of stuff. I mean, how can that be? There can't be two different powers fighting each other. The ABCs. God could and would if he were sought. The page before that is find him now. You have to find him or can you just look for him? I mean, what you have to do? don't get in your relationship the first year, but get a sponsor and tell them all your shit. Don't make any major decisions the first year, but turn your will over life over to the care of God. That's a major decision. Or my favorite one, half measures avail us nothing. You'd be amazed before you're halfway through. So then Donna says, are there any contradictions in your life? Ooh. And I thought back, and I graduated from college, and I'd sold my motorcycle and went to Europe, got a ride on a student ship, and went kind of on a big adventure through Europe. And I ran out of money pretty quickly, and I talked to somebody, a friend in the States, to wire me $200. I got the money, and I woke up the next day, and the $200 was gone. And I had no idea what happened, although I don't have a good idea what happened. I got drunk and played the big shot. You know, if I'm drinking, you're drinking kind of thing. And there's a line in the book about, in a lot of ways, we're normal, except when it comes to drinking. And I thought, you know, I've never gone into a grocery store and say, hey, could I buy everybody a loaf of bread? That night, I ended up in a mission, and I took my clothes off and had somebody spray lice spray all over me. And it's like, whoa, the disconnect between, you know, who I thought I was and what I was doing and what in the reality of what it was. And I had 9 more years of drinking after that. I don't know if it was a conscious thought or not, but I got to this place where with step 3, where I looked at that word decision. And I made a decision to work the AA program. Still struggling with the God idea. But I made a decision to work steps 4 through 9. It's like, I'm going to stop trying to change AA. And I'm going to give AA a chance to change me. And that was a momentous occasion for me. So I launched out on this, I wouldn't launch out on it, but I started looking at this blank page, which would be step 4. Got to thinking about what a mess I'd made in my finances. And I probably, conservatively, 80% of my money went to the proverbial, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And the other 20% I just wasted. But I got out this piece of paper and I put my father's name at the top of the paper. I hated my father. Hated him. There was a period of maybe 7 years where I wouldn't even talk to him. If I saw him on the street, I'd cross the street and I don't even know why. I can't even think why that was. But I put his name on the top of a piece of paper and I started to write some of the feelings that I had being the son of an alcoholic. And something happened to me that day. I can't explain it, but the hate just went away. It melted away. I cried and cried. I called my sister. I called into work, and I just wrote and cried, and something happened. It's like my willingness to look at this relationship, my willingness to do this work. I saw what a sick man he was spiritually. And something healed that day. On my fears list, I had women and God, which are really important relationships for me. And it's difficult when they're based on fear. And most of my secrets were around sexual misconduct. And I went to do my 5th step. It was kind of a rainy, dreary November day. And Donna had mentioned something about seeing a lot of trash, and she needed to change her attitude. And I go do my 5th step, which is, to me, it was like my life at that point it was like a garbage can. I'd ruined my life, and I dumped out this garbage can. And on the way back from doing this 5th step, we saw a rainbow, and I was very touched by the power that came to me that day. And there's some really clear promises in the book, page 75. I think. I don't know, but 75 sounds good. of what happens when a person does a fifth step. And those things happened to me. I felt the nearness of my Creator. The drink problem went away. And I just felt, I felt like I was participating in my own recovery. Thinking, wow, I'm doing this. I'm doing this thing that you said you did. I got so excited that day and went home and did 6 and 7. Like, oh, this is easy. It's only a little paragraph like that in the book. You know? About this same time, I bought a new car. When I got sober, I had an alcoholic truck. And I haven't been into the parking lot here, but back in my hometown, every clubhouse has an alcoholic truck. And then, you know, the springs are popping through the upholstery and the door panels are different color and the windshield's cracked and the tires are bald and somebody else's tags it on the back and it's got bumps every place. And I bought a new car. And I started going to a lot of meetings because I was trolling. You know, I hadn't had a date for about 5 years. If there was a woman that would have gotten in my truck, I would not have wanted to go out with her. You know? So I'm going to a lot of meetings. I don't know if anybody's planning to use AA as a dating service, but I will say that the odds are very good, but the goods are very odd. Now, I say that about myself, not about my wife, Betty, whom I met in a meeting. She said, you want to step outside and I'll work you into my story? Well, that's my story. I don't know. So I marry Betty, and Betty has 2 children. Angela was 6 or 7, and Sean was 13. So all of a sudden, I'm a dad and a husband for the first time. And I don't know how to do these things. And I'm working this program, and I find out about, you know, when you're by yourself, inventories are really easy. You know, I got a little drinking problem, but I'm okay other than that. And I get into relationships, and I have kids. It's like, whoa, I'm not the guy that I thought I was. And I find out that I'm a fault finder. I find fault with you, and I push you out of my life. I did that my whole life. I ended up, before I got sober, my best thinking was I was growing marijuana in this piece of property, and I wanted to put a barbed wire fence around it and keep everybody out of it. I'd just be in the middle of it with some wine and pot and vitamin C so I'd be healthy. And I realized that that's the worst punishment we have in America. The worst thing we do to somebody is called solitary confinement. And I did that to myself. That's where my disease took me. So I'm in this relationship now as a dad and a husband, and I'm finding out that I'm not that much fun to be around. And nobody can do the dishes right. My goodness, it's like either they don't do them or they don't do them right. And so I finally decide, in the interest of wanting to be peaceful in the family, is I'll just do the dishes myself. But I want to do them without resentment, too. So I'd go up to the sink, and I'd just stand there sometimes. And I'd have to stand there for a couple minutes sometimes just to get calm enough to just do the dishes. The dishes are very spiritual when you're just doing the dishes. And then later on, I read someplace, there's over 60 ways to do the dishes. I thought there was only one way. It was my way. It's like I have this set of what I call internationally accepted standards ways of doing things, and then that's the way you should do them. Well, that's just not true. And I thought, well, maybe that's a bad example because we didn't have a dishwasher, but I sponsor a guy who's got a dishwasher, and he's got a whole set of problems about how they're put in how you put them in the rack and all that kind of stuff. So. So what I start doing, because I really want to be a good dad and I really want to be a good husband, is I started treating my family like you treated me when I came to you. I started treating them like newcomers. I'd picture them, okay, if they're newcomers, how would I treat them? And I started treating them with a lot more love and a lot more compassion and a lot more just gentleness. And I would write little notes to Angela telling her about how happy I was that I was her dad and what a great daughter she was. And the relationship started to get a lot better. Many, many years later, I got to walk Angela down the aisle when she got married. I'm the stepdad. You gave me that. What an honor that was. Her father came up to me, her biological father came up to me at the wedding and thanked me for raising his daughter. I got to write the checks for that wedding too. I was happy to do that. I had a good job that I showed up to every day. You gave me that too. I was unemployable almost when I got sober. So I move on to step 8 and 9. 8 was pretty easy. I moved around a lot. I was probably sober 2-3 years before I realized you could move in the daytime. But the people that I hurt the most were my mom and my dad. And my mom died when I had 5 years of sobriety. And I was able to be a good son for those last 5 years of her life. My father, I invited him to come and live with me. He had been, my parents had gotten divorced when they were married 20 years, and he had married another woman, so married her for 20 years, and he got a divorce from that woman, and I invited him to come into my house. I had a lot of love for him. He came and moved into our house, and he was there for maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and somebody said something that he didn't like, and he said, "I'm out of here," and he left, and he died a very lonely man, but he was my role model. So I'm so glad that I found you so I could learn how to have relationships with people. The amends that really touched me the most, though, were a couple of financial amends. One was for $5 and one was for $10. The $10 amend, I had gotten too much money at a restaurant one day. I was the secretary of a step study meeting, and we had lunch afterwards. And I got too much money in change, and I'd put it in my pocket and didn't feel too good about it. And a couple weeks later, the woman who owned the restaurant happened to announce that she was selling the place, and that was going to be her last week. And I thought, I got to give her the money back. So I took her aside, said, I got too much money in change. I want to give it back again. And she said, "Are you sure?" And I started to cry. And I'm in this restaurant. It's the middle of the day. I give her this $10. It was the best $10 high I ever had. It kind of helped me to pay the IRS back, you know. That wasn't quite as warm and fuzzy, but, you know. The $5 amend, Sean, my son, when he was 17, had borrowed my sobriety car with permission and had gone out and he'd gotten drunk. And he smashed my car and almost killed his passenger. His passenger was in a coma for a week. And I was very unhappy about this, and I was not very spiritual. How in the world could he ruin my sobriety car? And some Al-Anon folks came to our house. They do house calls where we live. And one of the Al-Anon ladies said to me, "Maybe it's not your sobriety car. Maybe it's Sean's sobriety car." Whoa. That was his last drink. He was 17 years old, and he has 29 years of sobriety. Yeah. He finished high school and went away to college in San Diego. Calls me up one day and tells me he'd been stealing money from me and wanted to start paying it back, and he sent me $5. And I'd been a waiter. My last waiter and bartender was my last job before I got sober, and I had a big jar that I put my change in, and I looked at it and it was all nickels and pennies. He'd taken all the quarters and dimes out of it and, you know, bought a pot or something. So he sends me this $5. I'm really excited about it. Because I know, you know, we say how it works, we look at the steps, we say why it works, we read the traditions, and we look back at the steps at step 9 and say when it works. This program really comes alive when we do step 9, and Sean sent me $5. So I was doing well at the time, so I sent him back $100. You know, I didn't tell him the two were connected, but I just sent him $100 in the mail. A little while later, another $5 comes, and... Huh. You're getting ahead of me. So I send him another 100, and all of a sudden the fives come really fast. Step 10 is the step that I believe that if I had to pick a favorite, I'd pick that, because it allows me to understand where the problem is. I thought that you were the problem. I thought it was the Lutherans. I thought it was the Republicans. I thought it was the Nazis. I thought it was the Democrats. I thought it was the neighbors. It never occurred to me that it's me. I am the problem. If you're the problem, there's no solution for me, but I'm the problem. And you've given me the tools to quiet that disturbance inside of me that I have. So when I get agitated, I know where to look. A couple of my favorite lines in the literature, one is, I need to concentrate not what's wrong with the world, but what's wrong with me and my attitudes. And another one in the 12 and 12 is that it's a spiritual action that whenever I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me. No matter what it is, it's me. And I can do something about that. And Lyle mentioned last night a misquote in the book about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. It's what we were like, what happened, what it's like now, what we're like now. And it's like the story that I say is like you go out to the street there and there's a stoplight. It goes yellow, green, yellow, red, green, yellow, red. It does that all day long. It's doing it right now. But when I get out there and I get up to that light, I got a story about it. I want it to be green. And it's not. But it's not the light that's the problem. And I've got a buddy who, when he gets to a way of switching his thoughts about it, when he gets to a red light, he thanks God for his sobriety. Another guy that I know, he says when he gets to a red light, he closes his eyes for a moment and thanks God. Somebody will always let you know when the light's green. In our 10th step in the big book, it talks about watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It's like fear is that I'm not going to get my way in the future. Resentment is I didn't get my way in the past. And selfishness and anger are ways that I didn't get my way right now. So it's all about me relieving myself of the bondage of self. Buddha tells a story about he walked around barefoot a lot and he always would stub his toe. And he thought, wow, wouldn't it be cool if there was enough cows in the world that you could cover the earth with hides and make it softer? But he knew that wasn't possible, so he wrapped his feet in leather and the whole world changed. Step 11, I saw someplace that I really liked this. It said, sought by paying attention to improve my conscious contact with God. When I pay attention, I'm where the power is, because the power is right here, right now. It's the only place you can get to it is right here, right now. And, you know, right now, my head, my heart, and my feet are all in the same place. I'm where the power is. And I can connect into that power by paying attention. I love it. In our area, we have a lot of topic discussion meetings. And always, about halfway through the meeting, someone will say, what's the topic? And I say, it's paying attention. That's what the topic is. And I have some other quick prayers that I like. One is thank you, one is help, and one is wow. Those are all three good prayers. Step 12, I believe that I know that I'm a better driver as a result of this program. I haven't missed my exit on the freeway for a long time trying to teach you how to drive. Somebody tells a story about Chuck C where they went to pick him up because he was getting old and he shouldn't be driving to meetings. This is in L.A. And Chuck says, well, I only got to drive the one car. This is all I have to do. I don't have to worry about what everybody else is doing. I haven't looked in your basket at the grocery store to see how many items you have in the 10-item line for a while. And when I see trash, I try to pick it up. I don't like trash, and I spent a lot of years just complaining about the trash, but it's a lot easier just to pick it up. As far as being of service, I worked in the prison system for 15 years, and most of that work was 12-step work. And I taught a DUI class for about 20 years, and I've been in AA for 34 years, active in sponsoring people. And Steve, my buddy in sponsee, and I like calling people on their sobriety birthdays. We probably call about 2,000 people right now. If you'd like us to call you on your birthday, we have a book up here that you can sign it afterwards, and we'll give you a call on your birthday and wish you a happy birthday. But I think the most important part of that 12-step is the awakening that I've had. I woke up as a result of doing this work. I didn't know that I was walking around like a dead person. There was nobody home. And I'm present now. And I think a story that illustrates it really well is something called The Cookie Thief. It's about a woman who's at the airport. She has an empty chair next to her, and she has a bag of cookies there that she's eating. And there's another person sitting in the chair right past her. She's reading her novel, eating her cookies, and she looks over and sees the guy in the other chair eat a cookie, and she thinks that's kind of rude, but she's shy, so she doesn't say anything. And that goes on for a while, and she's still waiting for her plane, and eventually there's the one cookie left, and the guy breaks it in half and gives her half. And she thinks it's pretty rude, but she never says anything to the guy. Her plane's called, she gets on her plane, she gets settled in, gets out her backpack, reaches in for her book, and there's her bag of cookies. She was eating his cookies. That's kind of what my spiritual awakening is, I believe. It's like, oh, I was wrong. Oh, I was wrong about that book. That book is a fabulous book. That's the best book I have ever written. It's a fabulous book. I was wrong about God. This God that I have in my life now is awesome. I was wrong about the steps. I thought they were somehow punishment or something, but they set me free. I was wrong about love. I thought that I wasn't getting enough love. I wasn't giving enough love. See, I was a taker. I took and took and took, and everything was gone. And now I give and give and give, and I have so much. It's like, if you want... I learned that if I want sobriety, I've got to give away sobriety. If I want time, I give my time away. If I want money, give my money away. If I want love, give love away. I thought I couldn't trust you. No, I couldn't trust me. I can't be trusted. Don't leave me alone. I can't be trusted. I was wrong about gratitude. I thought gratitude was that you picked and choose what you wanted to be grateful for. It's like, I don't like that. That's in the don't like pile. Alcoholism, I don't like that. I'm not grateful for that. Well, it turns out that I don't know what pile to put stuff in. So I'm much better off with just one pile. And it's thank you, God. And I heard someone say just the other day, it says that gratitude is a way of telling the universe what you want. Grandma, I love your mashed potatoes. You want more mashed potatoes? It's the first thing Grandma says. And God's kind of like that too. When I focus on the things that I want and that I love, I get more of those. I've learned that here, that don't focus on the problem will get bigger. Focus on what you want. I was wrong about forgiveness. I thought I was somehow co-signing what you were doing, but that's not what it's about at all. It has nothing to do with you. It's about a change within my own heart, that I can be free of the past. I can forgive you, and you don't even have to know about it. Because it's an internal something that I do for me. So I look at these steps and I see them as, or sobriety in general, as like an escalator. There's an escalator here, and the escalator is going down. But I want to go up. So I have to keep walking all the time to go up because the escalator is going down. And if I don't keep walking, I'm going to go down. So I want to just give you an example of what I think it looks like when people go down, when they're not going up. And I call it working the steps backwards. So step 12, I have principles. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I got to get mine before you get it. Step 11, I pray, me, 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 more, 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 now, now, now. I have principles. I take inventory of yours. I don't know how in the world you stay sober working the kind of program that you work. Eight, I'm going to make it. Oh, I skipped nine. I'm not going to do nine. I'm not going to pay the money back. Eight, I got a list. It's a shit list, and your name's on it. Seven, humility is not one of my faults, but if I had one, that's the one I'd pick. Six, I like that Frank Sinatra song. I did it my way. Five, I'm not copying anything even if you have pictures. Four, I've been living in this place called Pityville, population one, for so long. It's like this shit fairy follows me around. I can never get a break. I'm so unlucky, if I fell into a barrel of tits, I'd come out sucking my thumb. Step three, I'm not going to turn my will over to God. What if he screws it up? Two, I've been given all this information now. I'm sure that I have a handle on it. Thank you for sharing how my mind works. So, one, you know, I might have been over-exaggerating this whole thing. I might have just been thirsty, and I'm not really an alcoholic. I think I'll have a glass of that fine wine. Thank you very much. Click, click. You know what happens to me when I take a drink? I get arrested. When they put handcuffs on you, they're saying you can't even be trusted with your own hands. You go to jail. I go to jail. Okay. What do they do when you, after they say, watch your head, sir, when you get in the back of the car? I say, what is this? Empty your pockets. I won't have any money, my money. Here's my sobriety coin. It says, till thine own self be true. I won't need that. I'll be lying to myself so fast it's not even funny. Wallet. Here's a picture of my youngest granddaughter. She's a real pistol. I won't be able to see her. Credit cards. I didn't have any of those when I was sober. Driver's license. That's going to go. Wedding ring. Well, I can't get it off because I quit smoking about 30 years ago. And I gained 20 pounds, 40 pounds, 60 pounds. I gained 60 pounds. I could put my teeth out there too, but that's probably not a good idea. I got a coin that says, I seek strength not to be greater than my brother, but to fight my greatest enemy myself. That will be gone. And I have car keys with a picture of a camel that can go 24 hours without a drink. All those things are gone. Everything good in my life is a direct result of me being here with you. And I thank you for that. But sometimes, you know, I ask myself, just because I like to think about stuff. You know, listening to that song, Dust in the Wind, and think, what's the point? What's the point of it all? Well, it's in the literature. The point is to be willing to grow along spiritual lines. Well, I wonder, what does that look like? Where do you put your hands when you do that? How do you do that? And the readings that I've been doing, and I'd like to read things, I see the same thing over and over again, is the best way to grow spiritually is to be kind to each other. And if you can't be kind to us, I hope that you can at least be kind to yourself. Because if you can be kind to yourself, you can't help but be kind to us. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.